Welcome to Soundbites, true stories told by local Mainers and nationally recognized storytellers. The themes are always changing and the hosts are from all over the nation, but when you hear the name Soundbites, you're in for a unique storytelling experience. Soundbites is made possible by the generous contributions of Allagash Brewing, Frontier, The Press Hotel, and by the listeners of Maine Public Radio. This story was told at Frontier in Brunswick, where the event's dedicated theme was Mum's the Word. Here's today's host, Vermont-based storyteller, Kevin Gallagher.
All right, I'm your final storyteller tonight. Okay. So I was very strategic in deciding that I wanted to go out of state for college. I had this need, desire, yearning to be more sophisticated, to get more culture. Going to high school in Rutland, Vermont. It's here for Rutland. Just the name doesn't inspire sophistication or worldliness. And so I really felt like I needed to broaden my horizons. But that wasn't the only reason, because a more important reason was that going to college, period, was the penultimate to the real goal, which is the junior year abroad experience, because that's where you can really get some culture, living in another country. So it's now 1981. I'm a junior in college. I'm not nearly as devilishly handsome as I am standing before you tonight. I am about 50 pounds thinner. I have an afro that goes shoulder to shoulder that rivals Lincoln Hayes from the Mod Squad. And my diet consists of tab and cigarettes. So if you need a visual, think of a smoking Q-tip. And you're pretty close. Now, I had a reason for it to be a junior year abroad program in Europe because I had this fantasy about Paris, that Paris was the city I wanted to come out as gay in. And the reason I wanted it to be Paris is that I had always been of the belief that French men are gay, or at least bisexual. Because if you think about it, you know, they're skinny and they wear tight pants. And they wear scarves, and they smoke long cigarettes, and they drink red wine, not beer, and they read poetry, and they have very little bathing suits. So to me, it was just sort of like a country filled with at least gay or bisexual men. But the other reason I wanted to come out in Paris is that my college roommate for the first 2 years of college was also going to be in an abroad program in Paris, and he was openly gay. Gay. Like, if you think I'm gay, he's like way more gay than I am. And I thought he would be a safe person to come out to. So one night in Paris, after a lot of red wine, I couldn't believe how nervous I was, even though I was sure it would probably go well. But, you know, I hadn't had sex with anybody yet. I would just tell people I was asexual. I mean, you have to think of my people. You know, I'm Irish. You know, like, when you think of hot men, you don't think Ireland. Like, you think Rome, or, you know, you think, you know, dark-skinned, you know, beautiful voice. You don't think of, like, drunk redheads. And no one goes to Dublin to get married except Irish people, you know. So I was quite nervous, and when I came out to him, he wept. And not because he was happy. He wept because I was making the worst mistake of my entire life. I would never be happy as a gay person. It's miserable. You don't know what you're talking about. You just think you're gay because I'm gay. You're ruining my life because the only two people I could count on in the world that were straight were you and my mother. And I confirmed for him that I said Lois from Carroll, Iowa. I said Lois is very, very straight. Like, you do not have to worry about Lois. But it felt like not the coming out I was hoping for in Gay Perry. And I also sort of thought Curtis should never sort of be a poster boy for the coming out process. So I finished up my year in England, And now it was time to travel, you know, my summer of love. And so I was hooking up with all my friends that had been in various countries over the year. And so I took my pasty white self from England for a year and went to the French Riviera, where I burned instantly on the first day on the beach, probably because of that beautiful Irish skin. But also back then, we used baby oil instead of, protection. We just really wanted to really get the darkness going. So after 3 days of watching my blisters come, I decided to go to Switzerland and throw myself in an Alp for a couple of days to cool off. And so I did that. You know, the blisters broke. I had my Heidi, yodel, ehihu, Toblerone moment. And then I was going to meet all my friends in Salzburg, Austria. So it was a beautiful day, not unlike today, and I was in Zurich, and I was at the train station, and I got on the Istanbul Express, a very similar route to the Orient Express, except cheaper. And the trip was going to be about 6 or 7 hours, and so I'm on the train reading, smoking, napping, reading, smoking, napping, 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 sleeping. And so I wake up to a conductor screaming at me. This is not uncommon when you're a college student backpacking in Europe. They just always yell at you. And so I'm trying to get my passport and my Eurorail pass ticket out to show him. And I'm thinking, God, this doesn't sound like German. But, you know, I'm not worldly yet, so I don't know what German really sounds like every day. And he starts looking at my ticket, and he's saying, you know, like something's wrong with it. And so I looked out the window, and the sign at the train station said, Budapest. And I'm like, Budapest, 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 Budapest. Where is Budapest? Budapest, Budapest. Hungary, Hungary. Where is Hungary? Hungary. Oh. Now, in my mind, I'm picturing the Eurorail map, because on the left side of the map were all these bright-colored countries that I could travel freely in all summer long. Then there was this black line, and then it was just all gray on the other side, and it said, you know, communism or something. And so I'm like, oh my God, I'm on the gray side. I'm on the gray side. So I asked, you know, the guy, you know, do you speak English by any chance? No, you know, French, you know, Italian, Spanish, like something I could work with a little bit. You know, nothing. He only spoke, you know, Budapestian. And so I said, me. Zurich, Swiss, yeah. Budapest. And it worked. Like, he was like, oh. I'm like, yeah, I fell asleep. You know, that's all that's happened. So he goes and gets another conductor. They talk about me for a while, and then they take me off the train, and they put me in a closet in the train station. And I'm not being overly dramatic because I know what closets are like, so I speak with confidence. It wasn't a bad closet. It had a chair and a light, but it had shelves with cleaning supplies and toilet paper and mops and brooms and buckets. Thank God I had my cigarettes because I was there for about 8 hours and sort of thinking like, oh, that Midnight Express movie. It's like I'm gonna, I don't even have drugs on me. I'm too Catholic even for that. No sex and no drugs in my life. And so eventually two other guys come and get me, and they put me on the train, and they went like this. And I said, I will sit here. I won't move. I won't say a word. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. You know. And I thought, you know, what they're doing, they just sort of like realize like someone at some border didn't check my papers, and so they're just going to like send me back, you know, to the gay part, you know, where all the colors are on the map. And so I'm riding, holding the map, waiting to cross over from the gray to the colored part, you know, and it's not happening hour after hour after hour. So I start walking around the train, asking people, you know, sort of like, do you know where we're going? Do you know where we're going? Finally, I found a British couple, and they said, yes, we're going to East Berlin. And I was like, oh my God, they're sending me to the mother of communism. I'm like Hitler's probably still alive, you know. And so I made a fatal error. I'm 21 years old, so it happens. I got off the train. Yeah. That's just how I felt years later. And I didn't get off at a stop. I got off at a mail stop. which is about the size of this carpet. And it doesn't have a vending machine or a bathroom or a ticket booth. It's just where they pick up a bag of mail and drop off a bag of mail. So I waited there for about 8 hours again. And another train comes. I got on the train with no confidence whatsoever. And sure enough, surprise, I don't have the right paperwork. And so I did the, smoke and Zurich Suisse and it all worked again. So, the mime thing has some benefits to it. If you can do it. But by the time I got to East Berlin, I was so exhausted and so dry-mouthed from packs of cigarettes that I said, I demand to see an English-speaking person, please. So they got me this soldier. I explained the situation, very sympathetic. He gets a couple of other soldiers. They get me in a car. These two soldiers bring me to the gate and, toss me over to the west. And what do I do? I have a Eurorail pass, so I go to the train station, and I take the train from West Berlin to Zurich, where I now get on the Istanbul Express again 2 days later. And I did arrive this time in Salzburg, thankfully, and did meet up with my friends. I didn't end up having any sex on the Summer of Love. But I do think I got a lot more worldlier than a lot of my friends did on their travels throughout Europe that summer. So thank you.
Kevin Gallagher is a psychotherapist by day, listening to the stories of life, but in the evenings he freelances as a storyteller, battling the curse of the Irish, the gift of the gab, and the misery of insecurity. He lives in Vermont and is blessed with a cat and a partner, Michael and Blossom. You figure out who's who. They provide much of the laundry and housework that completes his fulfilling life. Kevin has been a Moth Grand Slam champion twice and is co-founder of Say It Forward Productions, an organization dedicated to linking nonprofits and storytelling for fundraising and community involvement. If you've never heard someone ask themselves their own questions, get ready. It's kind of funny. We're going to learn more about our host here on Soundbites.
One word I need to change. I'm going to change it to who got me into storytelling. My partner, Michael, was actually at a coffee shop, and he saw a poster that said there was a storytelling event, and he came home and said, you're a pretty good storyteller, and you have a really good story that most people like. I think you should go. And I went for that first time, and it was very fun. My name got picked out of the hat, and it was very fun, and I thought, wow, I'd like to do this again. And do it again and do it again. And so I've been a pretty regular storyteller since 2014. I have a very specific way that I prepare a story. I like to write it because I like the visual component of the written word, but also it helps me organize my thinking. And then I can sort of move things around or edit or delete. But it's very structured. For example, say for a 5-minute story, I have 1-inch margins. I use 14-point font, Arial font, and I have 3 to 4 sentences per paragraph. And 5 minutes is about a page and a third of written word. So that part is very, very structured. In terms of kind of preparing to actually tell the story, I tend to like a lot of alone time in advance. Pacing is actually really nice, but sometimes you don't have the space to pace. Well, so one of the things that I don't quite get to in the story that I told tonight was the fact that this time in Austria, I ended up being very tired much of the time we were there because of the 2 days that I didn't sleep because of the train stuff, that I was known as the tired American when I was there. But some guy there, an Austrian man, was completely enamored by me and thought I was adorable because I kept falling asleep everywhere. And so as I left, he professed his great love for me. It was a perfect way to go back to the States and finish my senior year of college. We had a torrid pen pal relationship for that year. And then I went back to Salzburg, anticipating living there for the rest of my life.
And after about 2 weeks, it became pretty clear that we weren't very compatible. But that part is its own story, actually. But I don't really cover that in the story tonight. My connection to Maine goes back to probably when I was 7 or 8. My grandparents brought me to Maine for like a 4-day weekend. And going to the ocean and playing in the sand and eating lobster and mussels. And I just thought Maine was the most special place in the entire world. And then didn't come back again until I was maybe 14 on a family trip. But ever since college, I went to college in Boston, ever since college and after college, I pretty much make it a rule to get to Maine at least 2 times a year, ideally more. But I like to pretend that Vermont is Maine without the ocean, but I'm quite aware it's only pretend.
Soundbites is made possible by the generous contributions of Allagash Brewing, Frontier, The Press Hotel, and by the listeners of Maine Public Radio. Special thanks also to Toad & Co. More information about Soundbites, including how to attend a live storytelling event, is online at soundbitesme.org. And of course, you can always hear more stories at mainepublic.org.